Unreal. Uncensored. Unradio.
CliffCentral.com. I'm Adrian Groenewald, with me Richard Angus still, and this is the Transformation Platform, All Issues Transformation. We're a little bit stuck the last few weeks on BBBE, and that's an important part of our country's transformation, especially in corporate. So last week, as I said, we looked at the angle of the verification agency, and Eric Aykroyd shared some really good thoughts with us. You can go to that, download that podcast and listen to it. But now let's go to a corporate. You know, if you go to a corporate from their side, they're the ones who have to prepare and then run through an audit. And for some, it's very painful. And for some, I guess it's kind of a slick process. But somewhere inside a business, they must prepare and somehow deliver to their board, to their executive team, an acceptable scorecard, an acceptable level. If the company was a level 4 and the code's changed and you go back with a level 6, questions are asked, even though it may be a reasonable drop. Or if you drop to 8, you know, lots of questions, a lot of pressure on businesses. More so on some than others, hey, Richard? Some businesses are much more dependent on government and others less, and then you find more pressure in those type of businesses.
Yeah, well, I think something that's quite important for people to realize is that in many contracts that people have, no matter what they're supplying, many of those contracts in the corporate space all have a little rider, and most of those were put in to obviously manage BE, let's call it inside the environment. And most of those contracts have a little rider that says, if your BEE level drops, you will then have to inform the person you're supplying, and you will then have a period of normally 6 months to give them a plan of how you're going to fix the problem and then what your action plan is going to be. And then they have the right to either agree to that plan or make ask for substantial changes, and it could put your contract at risk. So if you've got a 3-year contract with an entity, you could find yourself having to deal with this process. But what most people haven't realized is the change in the codes is not a code changing capability that exists. So the change in the codes automatically trips this drop in level, so to speak. And so, I mean, and I've seen it. There was a tender that was in progress at some fairly recently, and it was a retender. And this document was issued by the guys in the corporate in question, and one of the terms that they required people to sign off on was this particular clause about the change in level. And I looked at this, and I wrote, contacted the parties involved, and I said, "But hold on a second, you guys are asking for this. Do you realize that the codes have now changed?" And so by implication, every single supplier is going to have an impact on their levels. Mm. And potentially everybody's going to drop, between 1 and 2 levels, depending on what, if the status quo has stayed the same, the measurement criteria does this. And the scariest part was the supplier the customer in question turned around, their procurement people turned around and said, "Oh, we hadn't thought of that." And I'm like, "Well, that's great. You've just sent out a document to a whole lot of people on an official tender, and you didn't realize what you were putting in your tender documentation." And by the way, this is a global company I'm talking to.
That's the problem. They're global.
And yeah, they don't. Well, that's the issue, that they don't realize. They're using the same template that they used 5 years ago, and they're just rolling this through, and nothing's changed. BBBE has changed, people, and you've got to know and understand how this impacts on your procurement environment.
Especially now, it's a pivotal moment.
It's pivotal.
With us today, Candy Tottiel. She's been doing this, you can do it closed eyes, from Tsova Sun's point of view, for many years. She's the GM Corporate Affairs for Tsova Sun, and it's great to have you in the studio, Candy. Welcome.
Thank you, Adrian. Lovely to be here again.
Yeah, so here's the topic. I mean, it's Richard, you gave us a practical example there. You have been doing this from Tsova Sun's point of view for some time. It's a huge part of your life, BBBE at Togo Sun, because of the nature of your business. It should be for all corporates, of course, to some degree, but definitely so for your business. And just remind me, you're now in the middle of these code changes as well.
Yes.
And you used to be what level, and you're trying to remain? Just give us the background there. It's tough, but it can be done.
Yeah. Togo Sun Holdings is currently a level 2 BBBE contributor, which we have been for the past 3 years. We've maintained that level through commitment and dedication to ensuring that we meet the targets internally that we've set for ourselves as part of our own internal strategy. And that's on a group level. So obviously there's other subsidiaries of Togo Sun that we have to also verify and take into account, so that by the time we do a consolidation, we get to a level that we'd like to achieve that reflects our commitment to transformation as a group. As a result of the gazetting or implementation of the revised codes of good practice, we which sort of first came to everyone's attention late 2013. We started obviously familiarizing ourselves with the content of the new codes and the framework and how things have changed and the structure, etc. And as you may remember, that at that time that document was released for public comment. So with the realization that the revised codes had significant changes within the framework of the what we knew to be the BBBE codes of good practice, we set about really having a good look at our business practices related to empowerment, but also we set about lending our views and sharing our learnings, in the hope that we could assist with the design of the ultimate publication of what were the became the have become the revised codes, so that they were not sort of wrought with unintended consequences, which the original version of those revised codes were.
So you try to positively influence that process,
yes,
the refining the legislation or
exactly.
the approach,
just lending our learnings, our experience as a large business in South Africa.
Because you're known as effective and efficient and as a successful company when it comes to this. I mean, you are a transformation company.
Yes, exactly.
Some of them accepted some of your suggestions?
Absolutely. You know, we didn't go off and give our own opinion on a standalone basis. We joined various forums. We sat down with others who also had the desire to see certain things accelerated, which is the reason why the revised codes were revised in the first place, and try to apply a positive influence on the outcome, so that it was not only achieving the transformation objectives, but that it was also ensuring that business was able to continue to do business in a practical, in a practical way. So that was our goal, we approached the whole process in the spirit of, of working together, all looking in the same direction, and perhaps coming from different perspectives, but certainly all trying to achieve the same objective.
Mm. Great. What do you see as the areas of most change and challenge in the corporate space? I was actually amazed when you said we started looking at this in 2013 when the codes were put out, because the reality is that most businesses saw the codes coming out, put their heads in the sand and pretended like they were never going to be a problem or never going to exist, and then kind of at the end of 2015 kind of went, oh, now we're going to have to audit on this. So, that's the, let's call it the extreme left on one side. You guys definitely engaged actively right up front. So what were some of the things that, as you've seen the code shift, for you as a large corporate, what have you seen as the areas of challenge and opportunity in terms of what you needed to, let's call it, what did you do to change behaviors and thinking more? Let's forget behaviors for a moment. Let's talk about thinking. What kind of thinking adjustments needed to happen within the organization? And I'm not just talking Togo Sun, I'm talking generally. What do you think the things are that are kind of on top of the radar that perhaps people out there have missed?
I could either give you the long answer or the short answer. I'm going to try and be succinct. But specifically, from our point of view at Sogo Sun, what was important to us at this time of change, in the codes was that we had a complete and proper understanding of exactly what would be required of our business in order to, and I use the word comply reluctantly, and I'll explain why in a minute, but in order to meet our objectives in this area of transformation. The reason I use the word comply reluctantly is that you can be a level 9, level 9 triple BEE level contributor status and still technically be compliant with the codes of good practice. You can be. That's exactly how it's structured.
Yeah.
So what needed to change for us to our priority was to ensure that the work that we had undertaken over the last 10 years was still reflected as an achievement or as good work when one applied the new framework of the revised scorecard.
Still a fair achievement,
So that was what we were trying to understand and what we needed to analyze in order to make the changes that we needed to make.
Yeah, I've heard somebody used a very good analogy of this change in codes. I said it and goes to the good old South African sporting analogies of it almost felt a little bit like we had rugby posts and a rugby ball, and then the whistle blew at half time. And when the whistle blew, after half time, suddenly the ball was round and the top of the posts had been taken off, and now we had a goal post in a soccer game. And you had to just kind of, okay, guys, we've got to adjust how we play this game. The ball is still in play. And the score didn't really change from before half time, after half time, but the way we score and the way we get goals, and before you could touch the ball, now if you touch the ball, it's a foul. So now you've got to change the way you play, and different people have to play different roles in the new team, playing post half time. And I thought about that analogy for a moment, and I thought, yeah, I guess that's still true, because the reality is, as the team, you still want to win. You still want to be seen to be doing the right thing. And you played the rugby game according to the rules, and you did everything right. You didn't do anything wrong. We just changed the game slightly at halftime. Both games are entertaining. Both have entertainment value. Everybody participates. It's still a participative sport. We didn't go from rugby to golf or something like that. It's still the game. But fundamentally, if you didn't wake up to this fact that the ball was changing and the whistle blew at the start of the game, this could have, and there are unfortunately people who are running around trying to grab the soccer ball thinking they're still playing rugby. Those who've woken up very quickly to, in fact, in halftime when they were cutting off the posts and changing the ball, they saw it happening and knew that they needed to change the game plan. So by the time the whistle blew, there was a new game plan in play. Those are the organizations like yourselves that were engaging, watching what was happening, and an alert to the environment.
But Candy's point is also that they really weren't keen on losing the investment they'd made, which is not an easy investment as well. That makes sense with what Richard says now.
Okay. Yeah. But Candy, you've been at this. Have you been involved for the 10 years now?
I've actually been involved since 2004. So yeah, just over 10 years.
So that's one of the tricks here is you're a real expert. at this.
Well, I wouldn't go that far.
I've engaged a lot of people, but you do know your game.
So yeah. You know how to coach rugby and soccer.
In a manner of speaking.
Yes, is that analogy that Richard just gave, is it only fair? Is it a fair analogy, or is it not so if you weren't unprepared? If your attitude was wrong towards it anyway, you sat there half time and you didn't listen because you didn't want to be in the game anyway. Therefore, you experience it like that, or is it a accurate analogy? And all corporates would feel that's how the game changed. Do you know what I'm trying to say, or was it somewhere in between?
Yeah, I do understand what you're trying to say. It's not far from the way I would view it, but I would prefer to make the analogy that the dance floor is the same, but the music has changed.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a change of pace, really. Mm. You know, and the big message that I would like to sort of get out to your listeners and those other corporates out there who are in a situation perhaps not as organized as ours is currently, but that's simply by virtue of the fact that we've got all the practices in place, we've got the infrastructure, we've got the tools to collect all the data that we need, we've got the reporting requirements in place, et cetera, which makes it a very practical business undertaking, not dissimilar actually from how you would undertake your financial audits every year. And we actually inside of Sorgo Sun refer to this as part of our non-financial audit, because the processes and practices at that level are very similar. So, but the message that I would like to convey, and this is partly my personal feeling, but also the reason that Sorgo Sun and I have such a wonderful relationship, is that because you have to take the subject very seriously.
Mm.
This is not a subject to which you can pay lip service. You also have to involve your organization in actual legitimate undertakings for bigger reasons than compliance, while compliance is obviously an essential part of the process, but you have to Simon Sinek, writer, author and speaker, wrote a book called Start With Why. And I think that the start with why goes to this very, very well, because, you know, for a business to undertake anything, the business must understand exactly why it's undertaking it.
Yeah. The real motive behind it, the real essence.
What are you doing and why are you doing it? But why first, you know, and then the what becomes apparent.
Mm.
So, by virtue of the fact that Sorgo is the company that it is, firstly, and its fabric is a true South African business. We'll be turning 50 years old in 2019. Started in 1969, long history with the country, a lot of investment in the country, a lot of property. We employ a significant number of people. We do make quite a significant impact in the space where we operate. Then obviously it's a no-brainer that you have to give back to the society in which you operate.
Mm.
Not only do you have to give back, because by saying give back, then businesses are often tempted to see it as a philanthropic exercise or a nice to have, or a soft science. But to say, you know, business can't thrive in an unhealthy society. Mm. And therefore, at some level, business's contribution to the betterment of society, and the economy is good for business.
Mm.
You know, I think it stands to reason.
Mm. Candy, just a point that concerns me. Our experience so far is often striking at large organizations, a lack of understanding of the full implications, as you sketched now beautifully. One's feeling is that this requires a senior management's full commitment, not just to have somebody with respect, middle manager, like a social investment situation, becoming expert, because that person will not have this context speak about. So I can't quite see it working, especially the next couple of years, without somebody in the senior management team being fully committed to it. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely, 100%. 100%. And that goes to good governance of a business.
Yes, good leadership.
So as an example, at Sorgel, in addition to our other governance structures, we run something called a BEE Council. And that BEE Council is reported on in our annual integrated report, as is our remuneration committee reported on in the same way, etc. And that council is chaired by our group HR director, and it's a small council, and it's structured to lead the organization's triple BEE imperatives the way that we have structured it within the group. Mm. The other people, just as a matter of interest, on the council, there's only a few of us. It's our CEO, our managing director of Sorgelson Gaming, our CFO, and myself.
Can't have a more senior team.
So it's really the top of the company, and it filters down from there.
Yeah. It's very clear that Triple BEE needs to be led. It's not something that you can just say and it'll be done. It needs that strong leadership culture. I must come in and talk. I mean, if I look at all the corporates out there that I look at and engage with, your proactive engagement definitely, and you can see the dividends are playing in the reporting that I've seen of yours, etc. You can clearly see that it's beyond compliance for you. It's moved way beyond compliance in your world. Just out of interest, I mean, one of the other kind of, let's call it, the flip sides of this that we've seen is we've seen corporates large corporates where there doesn't seem to be a connection with this whole issue of triple BEE. And I mean, in some cases you ask them where they're at in the new codes and they still don't know where they're going to be at, and that was kind of fairly recently. They're still trying to figure out where they're at. And CEOs seem to be, let me call it, disconnected from this challenge, and the organization seems to be organizationally challenged, with what's going on. I heard somebody the other day said to me, we're in a bit of a muddle on this one, and I sat back and I thought, but you're a large listed entity, and it's April 2016. How can you be in a muddle?
Very large.
And a very large institution. I mean, what's your message to your fellow corporates out there that are fumbling around? What would your message to their CEOs be?
First of all, there could be a reason why people are in a muddle, because over the past 18 or so months, there have been significant changes to the various drafts of the revised codes that have been issued, additional amendments. So there has been quite a lot of uncertainty around the actual sort of structure of triple BEE and how one applies it. And sometimes one can be tempted to sort of sit back and throw your hands in the air and say, could somebody just give me something I can rely on, and then I will follow the instructions,
That strikes me as a little bit of a compliance excuse.
But what I'm saying is there have actually been various challenges in this area that related, all the way down to the tiniest things like broken formulas in the codes that simply, no matter how you looked at them, they just would not compute. And fortunately, all of those sorts of things have for the most part, been addressed. But on the other hand, as we move into a direction of clarity in that regard, I would say that importantly, which is what I mentioned earlier, if an organization can see the practical application of triple BEE and the triple BEE verification process in the same light that they see the financial accounting and auditing process, then I believe that it will automatically begin to make sense for the business, because the same way that you account for your performance financially an organization who doesn't measure what its non-financial performance looks like is not going to be able to manage their non-financial performance. And that goes beyond Triple BEE. That goes to, you know, things like where you have to do annual integrated reports and you need to have frameworks and structures in place that help you, for example, the GRI and things like that, that help you look at your environmental performance as an example.
Yeah.
These things are all in place as guidelines in certain circumstances, as with GRI, where the business can take that and feel confident that by applying this particular set of guidelines to their performance, they'll have a fairly good understanding of how far away they are from where they want to be. Mm. Now, if you can at least have that kind of understanding, the same way that you apply that kind of understanding to your financials, you know, then I think it begins to make practical sense. It's really a very practical process.
Good advice. We're almost at the end here. Richard, you can jump in now. I wanted us to look at a few more tips, but I think they came in the middle of the conversation, tips to organizations on how to prepare for and run a very effective and slick verification process or audit. But are there software packages available right now where, because I've seen a business that can tell you exactly where they are now on every one of the legs, okay, and then there are businesses who have to scramble for weeks and months to get employment figures and spend on enterprise and spend on supplier development. And is there something there that practically, structurally, that you could say, guys, do this, get this? It'll help you have your finger on the pulse every moment. Just like a financial, a CEO can put his or her finger on the button and see where the financials are this time of the month.
There is, the way we've approached that subject is actually to say, let's not duplicate effort throughout the organization. Because importantly for us, it's been a process of saying to people, don't see this as an add-on to your position or your portfolio. See this as part of your everyday job. So where we've got systems in place, for example, a SAP system that we use for procurement and accounting and things like that, that particular system has got a wonderful add-on for Triple that you can collect in the self-same process, Triple BEE information. So what we've done throughout the organization is where there's an identified element that we need to collect data on a daily basis, etc., it's just seen as part of the normal course of events, as part of the normal information systems that we use. But what we do that's been very helpful to us, and we only started doing this about 4 or 5 years ago, is that we get all of our properties, or our subsidiaries rather, to report into one central admin office once a month on a structured, consistent document. Then that admin office takes that information via a system that we've actually built. So I can't answer your question and say, go and get this piece of software. But the back end of that system is Excel. So, you know, it's not particularly complex. But then what we do is, so they send us monthly reports on their activities and performance, etc., that's in line with the scorecard, so that we can then consolidate all that together. And then once a quarter, we feed that back to them so that they can continually, once a quarter, see how they're performing on their way to reaching their annual result.
Okay.
And we also then are able to manage the thing centrally so that we can say, you know, where we see somebody might be underperforming slightly, we can step in and you know, find out exactly what needs to be done in order to rectify
that. Richard, you want to, last point? We're out of time, but quickly.
Yeah, I just wanted to make the point that there's that old saying that says, when things are measured,
improved.
Improve and move along. But when they're measured, improved, and reported on, the rate of improvement accelerates.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
And that's
absolutely
the important thing here, is that constant reporting and knowing where you're at is a key in this process.
Absolutely. Mm. Absolutely.
Candy Tottiel, I guess we could get some more tips on another occasion. That was really very, very educational. And thank you for joining us from Talk of Sun. You guys are running a good transformation process there. I've no doubt it's beyond figures. You have big budgets you have to work with, but yet you achieve it. And I think, Richard, one of the core ingredients there is a constant. The constant being someone like a Candy, and I'm sure your team, who's become experts and who have been there, and therefore they know what they're doing. There's trust in the organization. I've engaged people around this, and you know when you sit across the table from Candy that she knows her game.
Yeah.
So that is a very important tip that organizations can hold on to. Thank you so much. That is the transformation platform on the Leadership Transformation Platform. We've been running since 12. Last half hour is Leadership in Education. We're talking to an award-winning teacher. I'm interested in this one. I mean, have we lost good teaching? Where are our good educators and good teachers, or is it just about homework? So stay with us.
One night of insomnia, plus, multiplied by, plus, multiplied by, plus,
wrong number.
Plus, multiplied by, divided by, plus,
Janet,
to the power of your name is actually Alice, equals the irritation of just one single mosquito buzzing around your head. Fortunately, you plus peaceful sleep room spray equals death to that irritation.
Unreal. Uncensored. Unradio.
Cliffcentral.com.